Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Nice to have you tuned in here on this Monday, and a happy 10th of July, summertime. Neil Stavem here, Ted Ross at the controls, and Chris is at the phone. And Ted, I know you were this weekend in Wisconsin at a music festival,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Life Fest in Oshkosh was fantastic. Yeah. Played a little drums for the kids' zone and some VBS stuff going on there.
All right. So. Hey, well, I want thinking about VBS, Vacation Bible School, I remember as a child, we would march into Vacation Bible School singing this old hymn, "We've a story to tell to the nations that shall turn their hearts to the right. A story of truth and mercy, a story of peace and light," and we'd go through all the verses. The last verse was, "We have a Savior to show to the nations."
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, in a number of ways, we've not done that one so well.
Unfortunately, not.
And in fact, in some of those nations and people groups where the gospel has been established and now showing us how to do it effectively. And on today's Connecting Faith, we're going to hear more about ministry to and ministry by the Hispanic Church in America. And looking forward to bringing back a friend, a guest we've had on before, and going to get caught up again. But just to want to do a quick reminder that we're giving away a copy of Kay Warren's book, Choose Joy, all this month, doing two copies each week, the Choose Joy devotional each week. And you can sign up for that online at myfaithradio.com.
It's right there on our main page, easy to find, myfaithradio.com. You got a good chance with two a week we're giving away. So
sign up for that. And a little bit later in the program today, we're going to hear from Kay Warren talking about choosing joy. So I want to stick around for that. Let me introduce today's guest. Dr. Alejandro Mendez is Executive Director of the Evangelical Free Church of America's All People Ministry. He's a native of South Texas. He has advanced degrees in social work from the University of Texas and theology from Dallas Theological Seminary. He's worked as a church planter, a pastor, Bible school teacher, and now serves as director of All People's Ministries for the EFCA. And he is the former executive director and current board member of the Immigration Alliance. It's a coalition of evangelical denominations and organizations mobilizing churches to provide low-cost immigration legal services. And we were just talking before the program, he's married to Julie from Leonard, North Dakota. I'm wondering, Alex, welcome to Connecting Faith. We're going to start. How did a South Texas boy run into a North Dakota Norwegian?
The will of God.
I like it. It's hard to beat and argue with that. So
it really, really is. Talked about culture shock, north, south, city, farm, Nordic, white, brown, Hispanic, and everything else, except for one major thing, Neil. We both were in the Navigators at university, and that little nail in the wall was what makes it all work.
Amen. And somewhat 40 or so years, and I know you got, five kids and grandchildren besides, right?
Yeah, those are my number one credentials as a Hispanic, 5 daughters in 5 years, 11 grandchildren, 5 years and under. I'll stack my credentials against anybody.
Okay. Oh, we're glad to have you back on the program today. And, you know, one of the, Alex is just passionate about serving the Lord and serving his Hispanic brothers and sisters in Christ. And he has said that, you know, immigration compassion is often only seen through the grid of politics, economics, and a fear of losing America's identity. But he says the foundation of immigration debate must be squarely framed by the two biblical mandates for the church, the Great Commission and the Great Commandments. Say more about that. What if we viewed immigration from a biblical framework instead of just politics and economics, how would that be different?
Well, first, I need to make this one issue, and that is, we need to make sure that what we do does uphold the rule of law generally. But as Paul said, we must obey God. So those three issues, you know, God sets government. We need to obey government. So I don't want to choose. So for me, this is where there's a big difference in terms of immigrant hope. And there are a lot of evangelical denominations now. There are the Free Methodist, the Nazarene, several of them that are understanding this, but what we have to do is keep the Great Commission, the Great Commandment, in front of us rather than it being purely a political and agenda and advocacy. So the way that you do that is making sure that's the first gate you go through. On one goalpost, one side is the Great Commission, the other side is the Great Commandment, and everything I'm going to run is run through there, and that is my justification, as opposed to some sort of a secular, political, humanist sort of an agenda. It may not look different, but my rationale is always going to be the same. So when the law is floundering, that doesn't change my purpose for why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm doing it to love people. I'm doing it because Jesus would do it. I'm doing it in a way that honors the government and obeys the government. And yet at the same time, we can do all of these things together. There are tensions, but that should be where we work towards.
Well, we want to focus on certainly politics and economics. All those things come into play in our daily life experience. But let's talk about the Hispanic church in general first. Give us your assessment of where you see the church today and maybe how it has changed since you began ministry so many years ago.
Well, first of all, the Hispanic church is kind of a lot of people will say, well, there's the Hispanic church, and then there's the Black church, and then there's the Asian church. Hispanics are different because they're not a race. You have white Hispanics, Black Hispanics, red Hispanics, yellow Hispanics. We are not a race, so we are multi-ethnic, multicultural in and of ourselves. I went to a church in New York. And when I walk into the church, it was all the colors of coffee. So many of them were from the Caribbean, but they were Spanish-speaking, and culturally I fit in. So in some ways, the Hispanic church is a throwback to where we were 30, 40 years ago, where everybody carries their Bible to church. Everybody wants to share the gospel. And in some ways, it's a throwback to the future in the sense I do believe that we are heading towards a post-Christian era. And in that throwback to the future, it's, I don't necessarily have to have a building. I don't necessarily have to have the budget. The mission is really clear, and we have an opportunity to be forward-thinking in that we may not have the tax deduction. We may not have all of the institutional support, but we can still turn the world upside down all over again. Since the Hispanic church doesn't have all those resources, they've learned how to do what they do without all of that. So it's a throwback and it's a throw forward.
You know, just as you said that, you know, Hispanic has been multicultural all along. And it seems that, you know, I guess maybe the white church has become much more aware of the need to be multi-ethnic. As you're saying, that hasn't really been an issue, or how is it different maybe within a Hispanic church? Is that something that becomes a key area, say we need to make sure that we're continuing to represent as many races as possible here?
Well, you know, Neil, when I started this 10 years ago, and also as a sociologist, when the immigrant comes, they're usually more nationalistic than even when they were in their own country, because they want to hold on to the vestiges of what they were and what they had. That's very common. But in the ministries that we've been involved in particular, we keep on pointing people to the Great Commission and the Great Commandment. And I want to tell you something. People can change and they can grasp that, such that now when I talk to my Hispanic leaders, which I worked with for a while, they get the mosaic, they get the multi-ethnic, they get the multicultural. The one thing that keeps them from becoming just a firestorm of an example for multicultural, multi-ethnic ministry is a linguistic barrier. But in every way, they are very, very welcoming of all kinds. There's just a very strong affinity because they do have relatives and friends that are of all different skin colors, skin color is not the issue. In some ways, the biggest barrier for Hispanics is the generational and the linguistic and the national diversity, not the racial, not the color. So in some ways, they don't have the same issues. But they're also coming out of a very Catholic context. And if you've been around Hispanics who've come out of a Catholic context, there's this incredible fire zeal for the truth and to share the truth with their family and friends. So it's a totally different dynamic. Now, as the All People Initiative leader, I love the African-American and the Asian community, and I've learned so much from them. In fact, the African-American community, in some ways, are big brothers and big sisters, in that they've helped us to understand the issues of justice and injustice, Martin Luther King, and so many of the great leaders in that area. How do you go forward and not let it just become a political thing, and yet at the same time have tact, have love, and not necessarily lean toward pure advocacy and violence? We're in a great position to learn, and also a great position to be teachers and of other groups.
Alejandro Mendez is my guest today. He's executive director of All People Ministry for the Evangelical Free Church of America. He's also created the EFCA Gateway Theological Institute, which provides informal theological training for urban and low-income pastors, and the also Immigrant Hope. And we're going to talk more about that in the moments ahead. You'd like to join the conversation, you are always welcome. Phone lines are open at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. We're going to talk a little bit about Immigrant Hope. We've got a training session coming up. What does that look like? There's an interesting article in Christianity Today about immigrant missions, about Hispanic leaders taking the gospel back home. We'll talk more about that with Alex Mendez coming up in a moment here on Connecting Faith. My guest today has been working in the training, equipping of pastors and Hispanic church leaders to share Christ in any and all situations, and they're doing that in effective ways. Dr. Alejandro Mendez, executive director of All People Ministry, has also created the Gateway Theological Institute and Immigrant Hope for the Evangelical Free Church of America. And Alex, in the latest Christianity Today, there was a nice article about called The Migrant Missionaries, and it caught my attention. It says, in 2014, U.S. migrants sent more than $108 billion to developing countries, with Mexico topping the list. In contrast, private charities spent about $44 billion in poor countries, and the government $33 billion. This is a pretty significant issue, just sending money back, but they're also sending the gospel back, too, right? To say more about what's happening in mission outreach in the Hispanic church.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, Neil, because I will be going to Chile in 3 weeks. So as we do this training for Hispanic leaders, a whole year's worth of training for $300. So it's portable, scalable, and affordable. So they want to take it back to their own country, which, in my philosophy, I say, God bless you, go for it. But then sometimes it's mission critical enough for me to go ahead and go and help them do that in strategic locations. So there are a lot of believers that come from Latin America, but a lot of them come here and they get training. And think about it, sending them back or their resources going back, it's so efficient and economical because they already know the language. They already can handle the food, the culture, the water. They know where to go. They know who to speak to. You know, here in America, we might spend anywhere from $150,000 to $200,000 equipping a family to go back that may or may not make it. But this surgical part of where we send someone back or we send somebody with resources can go right to where there is a great impact. So it's happening all over the place, and it's really, really hard for us to change that paradigm. Now, I'm talking about in an organization like we have. But there's a lot of that that happens organically, too, Neil. Mm. They're not asking for the permission of the Baptist, the Evangelical Free Church, or what other denomination. They want to make sure their family and their friends are being taught how to read the Bible, how to reach their other leaders. And I've seen this happening, and it's happening even more and more. So when we equip them and train them, it's not always to stay here. Many of them can't help but go back and impact their family. And you see that happening even in the scriptures. So it's pretty exciting and cool to be part of that.
Yeah,
I have to be careful that I'm very strategic in the part I play in that, but they do it without me.
Sure. Well, you know, I was thinking, you know, North American ministry models are sort of all based on big budgets, it seems. So under-resourced communities are still able to have effective ministry, apparently, right? It's maybe more on us to figure out to allow God's Spirit to work in the hearts of people, right?
I think if we are very careful and if we can look beyond history and time and see that there is a general tendency to ossification of ministry and death of mission and vision, and can somehow or another re-envision and see what God is doing in other parts of the world, we might have a chance here in America to re-up and do it all over again. I don't know if you've ever read the book by Stephen Addison, Movements That Changed the World. One of the things he said about the evangelical church is three things are killing us: overemphasis on budget, building, and credentials, which immigrants don't have. And so they're not always looking for money. They're not always looking for credentials. That's where we can step in with a program like Gateway that gives them the armor of David rather than the armor of Saul, that gives them the right hand of fellowship, that gives them the things that they actually need rather than what we need to validate what we've done for God. If we could see what God is doing in the rest of the world and realize that what God did in the book of Acts, he can do all over again in terms of reaching 5,000, 3,000 people. It's we and our systems that are slowing that down.
So what does that right-fitting armor look like? I mean, your passion is training and equipping Hispanic pastors and church leaders. So what are you doing that may be different or doesn't fit the way our paradigm normally thinks it should?
Well, first of all, in nothing that I'm going to tell you right now, Neil, do I want to detract away from seminary. Obviously, with 400 college hours in seminary, I love it and I believe it. But when I'm talking about immigrants, first of all, who can't go to university and beyond university to seminary and beyond seminary, those sorts of things, what do we do with those people that are called and gifted? That's a question we have to ask ourselves as leaders. If they're gifted and called, can we step in and give them what they really need, the adequacy for the gospel? So for us, it's really having a real hard conversation with ourselves about what do they really need? What are the five stones, the slingshot, and the name of the Lord that they need to be able to impact the community? So what we do is we take the basic doctrine. And basically, in 1 year, we'll go over two theology books. So the main thing that we want them to do is understand Bible and theology and understand their call. And then we have a second part that's called boot camp, which is philosophy of ministry and church planting. So all of this work, really, recently we were working with our seminary, Trinity, that clept them basically for all that work about 30 hours. So it's almost a first-year undergraduate degree of work. So we want to give them enough, but not enough that they can't handle, because financially they'll come out of debt. Socially, they won't be able to identify with their community because they've been gone so long. So what we've seen that do is that it has really generated a lot of evangelism, discipleship, and church planting, at least in the Evangelical Free Church. And I'm sure we're not the only ones that are thinking this way, Neil.
And it really, as the title suggests, it really is a gateway, isn't it? This is an opportunity to move forward into a whole new area of ministry.
Right. In fact, we created Gateway to be the same in English and in Spanish. So when you look at our curriculum, when you look at our books, even the books that we chose that they read, they're in English and in Spanish. So you can even be having a class in one language, but other people are listening, and they may be able to understand the language, but they're reading in their own language and they're writing their papers. So it's very out of the box. It's very innovative. It really understands the realities of where people are. The other thing that's really cool about it is a lot of our teachers are pastors who are very practical, who are already doing it. And so they are living examples of what we want these students to be. That's one issue. But the other is the cross-cultural impact both ways of the facilitators and of the students has created a real partnership that is very, very fun and encouraging. And it's not even the Hispanic thing. There's so many young leaders and there's so many second career people who can't afford seminary at that age. They're not going to go back. And so bringing this training at a lower level has created a whole nother niche that hasn't been met. And that's just part of basically equipping the church to do what God has called them. So, you know, the seminaries put out our Abrams tank. We need those people. We need those cutting edge, hard thinking. But then what we're creating are infantry and guerrilla warriors that can go into areas that haven't been reached. And it brings health. The Bible brings health and it brings growth. So for me, it's not to the exclusion of seminary. It's in terms of warfare, you need to have room for both, and both bless and both edify. In the Evangelical Free Church, people can become licensed and ordained by Gateway, which is a big difference for some organizations.
Alex, if people want to find out more about your work and some of the programs that you're offering, is there a website or what's the best way to connect at this point?
Yeah, so it would be pretty simple, efca.org/gateway. We just celebrated 10 years of ministry, and we've had like 1,300 go through the training. About 100 have actually become credentialed through that.
Hey, let me break in here. We got a hard break coming up, but we'll pick it up on the other side here in just a moment. With Alex Mendez, talking today about reaching out to the Hispanic Church and the great work they're doing and how God's at work there. And you can join us at 877-93-FAITH. Talking today about God at work among the Hispanic Church and how we can maybe learn a few lessons from our brothers and sisters that are doing the work. Alex Mendez has a heart, has been a catalyst for multiplying healthy Hispanic churches by identifying potential leaders and equipping existing Hispanic pastors all across the country and really around the world. He directs the Evangelical Free Church of America's All People Ministry, developed the Gateway Theological Institute, as well as Immigrant Hope. We'll talk about that in a moment. But, Alex, you're just saying that you've had hundreds going through the training, the Gateway, and that the pastors are out leading the way. Just say a bit more about the kind of impact that, you know, some of this, you're seeing some fruit of the training over the years.
Yeah, we have So we've done this for 10 years now, and I really think the next 5 years are going to be the most impactful. The fact of the matter is when you go to a Hispanic church, you don't have the opportunity and blessing that many of the majority culture churches have, where they have people that have gone through Navigators, Campus Crusade, InterVarsity, BSF, and so many of these other trainings. So in a majority culture church, you'll have a lot of trained people. Not so in an immigrant church or even an ethnic church. And so one of the things that Gateway does is not only credential the leader, but also build the bench for elders and deacons and ministry leaders. That's an impact that's being had that can't always be measured by looking clearly at the credentials that people get. So the other one is being strategic in thinking about church planting. So you have an immigrant church that speaks a different language. If they can nestle into another congregation and use like the high school room at the same time as the main congregation, that takes care of all, fixes a lot of problems, because in a Hispanic or an Asian church, they can either pay the pastor or for the building. But if they can nestle in and use the facilities at the same time, it solves one of the problems for the major expenses. But the other is the children all speak English because they're in school. And so they go into the mainstream with the students. That just really solves a lot of issues. And so I think in the last 3 or 4 years, we've helped start about 100, 150. The hard part is the metric. We're really trying to figure out our metrics on that. But the church planting part of it, in terms of a church in a church or a second language service, are an incredible windfall that we're not even counting right yet.
Good.
So it's thinking of a different way.
Yeah. Are the issues maybe different from an urban Hispanic church to a rural congregation? Or you mentioned generational issues. Are those bigger concerns, the a previous generation versus sort of today's immigrant kids?
Well, two things. First of all, the immigration and issue in terms of rural versus urban have really been changing dramatically. In 40 or 50 years ago, they used to go to major cities. But it's really transitioning now to where you see a lot of immigrants moving into rural areas because of, meatpacking, because of agriculture, because of small cities having big opportunities. There's a lot of interesting stories where small towns in Iowa were closing and they were shutting stores, and all of a sudden they're opening up and they're having taquerias and the schools are full. And so that's an interesting dynamic. But the issue of generation, which is what I wrote my dissertation on, has always been the bigger challenge because it's just written like a script, Neil. First generation sacrifices and dies for the second generation that is bilingual and bicultural, that goes out and goes into the workforce and can identify with both cultures. Their children, the third generation, basically forget the language and move on. Now, you put that in a evangelical context where even in a majority culture, kids graduating from high school leave the church when they go to college. And so you have this huge, what I would call generational shear. However, when you nestle a Hispanic church or an Asian church in a majority culture church where they can go to church and if they're, aligned in terms of language, theology, mission, and vision, that double wind shear is reduced. And because of the tight-knit family, there's a lot better opportunity for the immigrant's family to stay together and have a greater impact in their own community in terms of reaching the other immigrants.
Alex,
that's a big challenge, the generational challenge.
Mm-hmm. Alex Mendez is my guest today. Alex, I know that you and your wife did work with the migrants, Minnesota and North Dakota, early on in your ministry. Are Are those needs the same today in terms of maybe ministry needs than they were back 20 years ago?
Interestingly, Neil, somewhere around 15 years ago, the migrants that used to go back to Texas decided to stay. So it's a dynamic that is it's really changing. So you'll have these old migrant families that are part of the area that will do migrant work in the summer, but there's still migrants that come. So it's not that clean, easy, when your fields are done, we're gone. Sort of a routine. There still is migrants that come, but the other thing is the immigration law has made it a lot harder for migrants from out of the country to come. So the agricultural community is having a hard time right now, just a real hard time finding the agricultural workers they need. And there's no longer the Bracero program that used to be around in the 50s. But the other thing is farmers and agriculture today are becoming much more mechanized. So in the Red River Valley, they used to need them to weed the sugar beets. Well, now they've got a big tractor that basically does that without the migrants. And they've got pesticides and herbicides that do so much work. So it's still there. It's still needed, but not as intensively as it was 30 and 40 years ago. They're more moving towards agriculture and meatpacking in those communities.
You mentioned immigrant law. I know that you have a part of one of your ministry outreaches is Immigrant Hope, and you do training sessions. I know that you have several throughout the course of the year, but talking about laws, one of the things you talk about, what happens in one of those sessions, and what are the questions that immigrants are asking?
Well, what we're trying to do with Immigrant Hope, that is led by Ben Johnson, what we're trying to do with that is the government does not want people giving free law because they're going to mess people up and then they get in trouble. So the government has created an alternative track for legal counseling. If someone goes and gets 40 hours of training, 40 hours of experience, and works in a government-recognized, be it church, they are willing to let them get counsel. So they can still charge, but they've got to be recognized people in certain places that have gotten these credentials. And so Immigrant Hope sites have had people that went to this 40-hour training that we do, the Mennonite Central Committee, World Relief do them. So we're not the only ones, but one of the things that we really push is not only the 40 hours of training, but also equipping in terms of evangelizing, in terms of making sure that we have a gospel vision and mission for why we're doing what we're doing. We don't want to necessarily just go back to the social gospel where we're just helping people without connecting it to the gospel. For us, that's very important. So the mission of Immigrant Hope is to provide the help of the gospel, help in a legal pathway, and a home in the church. So it's getting the legal training, holistic ministry. You want to give people what they want, not just what you have, but then couple that with what needs to happen for real, which is a relationship with Jesus Christ and a church that they can get involved in. Now, because we're doing this with the government sanction, we have to provide the training for anybody that comes. So we have Muslims that will come. We have Buddhists that will come, and we receive them with the love of Jesus Christ, and we lay it out there in terms of this is why we do what we do. Interestingly, we've never had any pushback from people in the class that were not Christians because we're very, very open and honest about what we do, and then we don't shove it down people's throat, but we say this is what it is, and this is how you would do it in your context.
Alex, we've got just a couple minutes left. Curious to know what your thoughts on short-term missions trips. I mean, there's probably church groups all across the nation that are packing up and heading someplace into Latin America. Good thing? What could we do better? How could we make them more meaningful?
I'm going to be going on one in about 4 weeks. So I think it can be good and it can be bad. If people are just seeing this as an opportunity to see something new, it can actually be destructive because they go over there and they have a colonialist attitude. They'll have their iPads, their earphones. They'll kind of taste the food and turn their nose up at it. That does happen. But, for example, the church group that I go with, Northwest Community Church here in San Antonio, has done a great job of cultivating the youth to help them understand the culture, to have a bigger perspective of why they're doing it. They're also going because they want to explore a future partnership with some of the churches there. So it's not just a one and done. It's how can we learn from you and how can we share with you? So there has been, I think, a lot of abuse, Neil, and there have been some books that are written about that, you know, when helping hurts. But that doesn't mean we necessarily throw out the baby with the bathwater. Some of our students that go that have been trained can be that next generation of leaders that invest their life. So we've got to be very careful that we aren't necessarily condemning it all, but just because people go doesn't mean it's on mission.
Alex, I'm so glad to get caught up with you again, and blessings to you as you travel. I know, as you mentioned, to Chile here coming up soon, and to be able to continue to figure out ways.
And Norway.
All right.
to 40th anniversary, baby.
All righty. Sure. Well, have some lutefisk and lefse for me. So,
anyway,
and put some hot sauce on it. Alex Mendez is director of All People Ministry for Evangelical Free Church of America, joining us today on Connecting Faith. You can find out a little bit more about the Gateway Theological Institute and some of his, get connected to him through efca.org/gateway. Be a good way to connect. Dr. Alejandro Mendez joining us today on Connecting Faith. Here at Faith Radio, we are making the commitment to choose joy no matter what. And this month, giving away two copies of Kay Warren's Choose Joy devotional every week. You can sign up online at myfaithradio.com. And a while back, I had a chance to talk with Kay Warren about her thoughts on joy. And the reality is that, you know, life is not always joyful. But here's some good words from Kay Warren. You give an illustration of railroad tracks, kind of analogy of that, because the reality is that while we can choose joy, suffering and evil seem like they're always present. So how do we deal with that paradox?
Yeah, I used to think that life came in hills and valleys, you know, or ups and downs. People always talk about, you know, ups and downs. There's an upside and there's downsides in life and the hills and the valleys. And I think, you know, maybe it comes that way, but I think it more often comes in what I call this parallel set of train tracks. And so that every day of my life, there is something that is beautiful, that is a cause for joy. There's something every day that is joy. And that's one train track. And at the same exact moment, there's something that happens or that I could think of or that occurs every single day that's sad or that's sorrowful or shows how broken this world is or how broken my body is or my relationships. And so joy and sorrow run side by side throughout our lives every single day. And, you know, as human beings, of course, we want to lean toward the joy side and just try to make everything always happy and everything good and everything positive and try to stay off of that sorrow track. But it's impossible because this is earth, not heaven. And this is a broken planet. And like I said, everything in life is broken. Every relationship has breaks in it. Some of them irreparably. Our bodies don't work perfectly. The weather doesn't work right. Politics sure doesn't work right. I mean, everything about our world is broken. And we can't escape it, no matter how hard we might try, how much we might want to deny it, say it doesn't exist. Evil and suffering is a part of our daily lives, but so is joy. And so for me, the trick, if you will, or the goal is to learn how to go down both of those tracks every single day, not be thrown off by the sorrow, not trying to avoid it, not just being a Pollyanna or somebody who thinks that everything is great if I'll just think positively enough. It's recognizing that both are true and that both can be experienced every single day. When my youngest grandsons were really small, they loved trains. And so I would take them down to, there's a train depot near us, kind of a rural train depot, and I can take them down there. And, you know, if they're not paying too much attention and it's completely safe, they love to get on those tracks. They love to just stand there on those tracks and listen for the sound of a train coming, in which case we would scramble way behind the barriers and, you know, be very safe. But I noticed one day that as we were standing on the tracks, that if I looked off into the horizon, if I looked as far down the tracks as I could see, eventually those two tracks, I couldn't distinguish that there were two tracks. They melded into one, if you would, right at the horizon. And it gave me this picture in my mind of that's exactly what will happen to us someday. That as we're in life right now and we're on these parallel train tracks where there is suffering but there is joy and they run right next to each other, that someday in the brightness of Jesus coming, you know, when he comes for us and he takes us back to himself, in the brightness of that, those that joy and sorrow tracks will meld into one, and there will just be one track left, you will, and it will be joy. And that gave me so much hope to think that, yes, while this life has both, one day, only the joy will remain. And that encourages my soul to keep going, knowing that at one point, one day, Jesus will change all of that.
One of the questions I'd written down is, you know, can we know with confidence how our faith life will respond when trouble comes? I think, you know, deep down, we want to be able to say, yes, I'll choose joy when the hard stuff hits, or when that suffering track is more prominent than the other. Are there ways that we can be more confident in how we respond?
I think you only know how your faith is going to respond when you're in it. You can do the preparatory work, which is sending your roots deep into God's love, into his word, into who he is, into his character. Those are all things that you and I can do on a daily basis that prepare us for when the carpet gets pulled out from underneath us, when we get those bad news calls. But the only way to really know how strong or stable your faith is to have it tested. I mean, an untested faith is an unreliable faith. We can just hope or cross our fingers or, you know, hope that my faith is going to be okay when tough times come. But the message paraphrase of James 1:2 says that in hard times, our faith life is exposed. I mean, it's out there. It doesn't matter at that point what I say I believe. It doesn't matter what I've always thought I believed. It doesn't matter what I've taught or what I tell other people I believe. None of that matters, because when your faith life is actually exposed and you're in the most difficult, painful moments of your life and it's just out there for everybody to see how you're going to respond, that's when you know whether your faith is as strong as you thought it was. And it always has bothered me to think that I can talk a good talk. I mean, I've been a Bible teacher for years, and so it's really easy for me to say all sorts of things about how strong my faith is. But the only way I really know how strong my faith is when it's exposed to the winds of adversity, to the losses of death, to the brokenness of a body that doesn't work well, to children who go a direction, to a divorce, to abuse. That's when you know where your faith really is. And our neighbors and our coworkers and our family members who are not believers, they're watching. They really are. And sometimes it's with a judgmental eye, but sometimes they're just as hungry as anybody else to know, okay, so you say you're a believer in Jesus Christ. You say that you have this strong faith in him. Show me how you act, how you respond when the dark days, when the dark times hit. And so we were very keenly aware on one level that there was a watching world, from neighbors to family to coworkers to our kids, our grandkids. there was a watching world that wanted to know how we were going to respond in the suicide of our child. And that's a lot of pressure, but it also is mostly exposed to me some holes in my faith, exposed some places where I wasn't as strong as I thought I was or as stable as I thought I was in my faith. And it's given me the opportunity to put my money where my mouth is. I mean, I want my grandkids to be able to look back on my life and say, you know what, my Grammy, she lost her son. She lost our Uncle Matthew. And it changed her. And she's not exactly the same person she used to be. But what I saw in my Grammy and my Papa were people who loved Jesus with their whole heart, who believed that he was in control of the details of their life. They believed with everything that they had that ultimately even this tragedy was going to be okay. And I saw my Grammy and my Papa praise Jesus and love him. That's what I want. And so knowing that the exposure of my faith life in tragedy had an opportunity to teach lessons far more profound than any Bible study I'd ever written, that my life is teaching my faith to those who watch. That is a motivation to me to make sure that my faith walk with Jesus is exactly as strong and stable and true as I say it is.
Kay Warren talking so openly about the loss of her son. Her and Rick lost their 27-year-old son, took his own life, and out of that, she has used that suffering to develop a wonderful devotional called Choose Joy. And we're giving away a couple of copies of Kay Warren's Choose Joy devotional each week during the month of July. And I want to just encourage you to sign up, myfaithradio.com, give us your contact information, and giving away these devotionals, which can not only be an effective encouragement to you, but think about others that maybe just are going through very dark times and they're on that sort of that track of suffering and just need to see the joy that is set before them. So sign up for that, myfaithradio.com, the Choose Joy devotional with Kay Warren. And by the way, if you want to hear that full interview with Kay Warren, I recommend it as well. You can find the podcast, the interviews archived on the Connecting Faith Show page at myfaithradio.com.
To live a lifestyle that exemplifies God's love. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas for Making Your Life Count, and Kay Horner talks about how, in our daily walks with God, a lifestyle of praying, caring, and sharing just becomes natural.
When we talk about a prayer, care, share lifestyle, that sounds like just a cute cliche, but in reality, there's this ongoing relationship of prayer that inspires us to go out and care in our communities.
Well, here are just a few of the many ways to make a difference.
Maybe at your local pregnancy care center, your local English as a second language classes, engaging in tutoring programs at your schools. And once you open that door, their hearts are more open and responsive to hear the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
What a rewarding way to live, touching people for eternity. To learn more about the Pray, Care, Share lifestyle, go to MakingYourLifeCount.com.
Thanks for joining us here today on Connecting Faith. If you want to hear the Kay Warren interview, we just shared a portion of that. Or our earlier conversation with Alejandro Mendez, you can find that. We'll post that interview on the website as well. And Ted, I'd like to see Alex and his wife hanging out in Norway.
What a great opportunity.
Looking for some spicy food. So, what? Herring again? Cheese? Come
yeah,
on.
Right.
I need something. Give me something here. He's a great brother in Christ and appreciate him a lot. And if you want to hear that full interview or maybe pass it on to a friend, of course, you can do that online at the Connecting Faith show page of MyFaithRadio.com.
A great show coming up tomorrow as well, right?
Well, looking forward to that. Another return guest, Randy Newman, who is a campus ministry veteran with Campus Crusade for Christ, written a number of books, and we're going to talk about his updated book, Questioning Evangelism. Now, he's not actually questioning evangelism, but the subtitle is Engaging People's Hearts the Way Jesus Did. You'll find it fascinating tomorrow on Connecting Faith. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.